Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Churros y Tacticas podcast. This is your host, Keon Sobani. Diego Lorin is away this week. He's going to be away for like 10 days total. So there's going to be a few more days of no Diego on the podcast because he's in Ibiza. He's enjoying sunsets with his family and listening to trance music, so good for him. I don't even think his Wi-Fi connection is good enough to record. And as I mentioned on the Friday Patreon episode, I wanted to use this opportunity to get some Atletico Madrid guys on the podcast. So joining me today to talk about some La Liga stuff, Atletico in particular, some Isak stuff, which is huge news today, is Sam Leverage. He is, I believe, the second person in history to write for both Into the Calderon and Managing Madrid. So he's doing a bit of both. Obviously, the first person is Ewan McTeer. So, Sam, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me on. I didn't know I was in such a illustrious company with you in there, but good to know. And, yeah, I'm not quite in Ibiza like Diego, but I'll try to fill in for him this week and, yeah, talk all about Atleti and all things La Liga.
Well, you are in Spain, though.
Yeah, I am in Madrid, so just missing the beach and the nice views, sunsets, but yeah, still, I think it's, what, 37 degrees Celsius centigrade today, so hot, yeah, still in that August heat and football kickoffs late on to try and make up for it, so yeah.
Yep, you are in the absolute heat of the heat, and it's going to cool down probably in a couple months, but for now, you're going to be suffering the Madrid heat for a while. So let's talk about La Liga. I wasn't planning on talking about this today with you. I wanted to focus more on Atletico, but Alexander Isak going to Newcastle today for $70 million. Sam, I know that this leaves La Real in a weird position because it's late-ish in the window. You don't have a striker lined up yet, although I'm sure you can put that money to good use. You have to take that, right? That's an insane amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible money. I mean, earlier in the year when Arsenal were linked, there were rumours that Arsenal had said it was way too much money, that they couldn't afford to pay his release clause, that he wasn't worth it. So for Newcastle to turn up and say that they'll pay it, I mean, Real Sociedad must have bitten their hands off. I mean, he's got huge potential. He's a very talented player. But, I mean, for that kind of money, I think Real Sociedad didn't have a choice but to say yes. And there are options in the market that they can sign. I mean, Raul de Tomas, Enes Unal, players like that who are available at a cheaper price. So I think they'll be thinking that, yeah, they'll probably have to take a downgrade for the next few months at least, but they can take a downgrade and pocket 20, 30, 40 million at the same time. So I think long term, they're seeing it as an investment in the future and how they can kind of rebuild this squad for the years to come as well.
I like Isak. I think he's a good player. But I also think, like, to your point, like, to downgrade, but also, you know, pocket 30, 40 million or whatever it is and end up spending out of that 70 million, you might not even downgrade. And I, with all due respect to Isak, he's really good, but he's 22. He's not like a teenager or anything. Last season was pretty poor. Just want to pull it up here too. Last season, 6 goals in how many appearances? What he played
a lot. He was playing pretty much every week, wasn't he?
6 goals in 32 appearances, and he only had two assists to boot. Obviously, the year before that, we're looking at a 17-goal player and a player who hopefully would grow from that 17 and increase his goal tally. But 17 to 6 is a huge drop-off. And that it's not like he's coming off this incredible season, which begs the question, what are Newcastle doing? How is it really impossible? Like, how can you spend $70 million on a player like who hasn't had no production in the past year or so? Maybe they see something completely, like they're just visionaries and he's going to go in and become 15 to 20 goal kind of player. And even then, is that worth $70 million? I'm really not sure. You mentioned Raul de Tomas. How much is he worth, though? Like, I've seen reports of, like, people are saying, why don't you sign him for $20, $25 million? Is that really all he would go for?
Well, I think Diego Martinez has reportedly had a row with him at Espanyol and they haven't really got on, the two of them. So I think Espanyol are inevitably going to have to accept a reasonable price for him if the club does come in with a bid. And I think they're keen to move him on before the end of the transfer window. Raul de Tomas is keen to leave before the end of the transfer window. So I imagine that 20, 25 million might be enough to get that deal done. I mean, it's still a decent deal for Espanyol. I mean, they signed him when they were facing relegation and it's worked out quite well for them having him there. But I think his time is up at Espanyol. And so, yeah, maybe even Real Sociedad, they see that as a team that isn't going to compete with Espanyol and that they can get 25 million out of it. Maybe if they were trying to sell to a team like Sevilla, they might struggle to get that much out of. So I think maybe that is the deal, but it's another difficult one. It's a bit like the Alexander Isak, that there's always going to be somebody to justify the price, whatever it is. So Newcastle, I'm sure we'll talk about, not last season, but the season before when Alexander Isak was 20 and scored 16 goals, but then other people will say, no, that's not enough. I mean, look at last season, 6 goals. I mean, it's always going to be that debate around the transfer fee. I think it's very difficult. I think with Isak, it was the one issue that I think was his biggest issue throughout his time at Real Sociedad was the consistency. And I think last season, of his 8 goal involvements, 4 of them came in 1 week in October. And that means this, across the rest of the season, there's only 4 goal involvements. So Raul de Tomas is that kind of player that's a little bit more consistent, that maybe they can rely on him throughout the whole season. He might not have those kind of purple patches where he scores loads of goals in 1-2 weeks, but then he will be a little bit more consistent throughout the season. That might actually be better for Real Sociedad as they look to kind of push on in that race for Europe with Villarreal, Betis and so on all pushing as well.
Some people will say, like, you know, the fact that he's 27 versus Isak's 22, like, you know, there's 5 years difference there and Isak at least is a bit more for the future. I would almost say that Raul de Tomas makes more sense because of that reason. He's ready now. He's in his peak and 27 is not 37. That's like a good 5 years at least he's got left in him. And it's very possible by the time Isak becomes like a Raul de Tomas type consistent player, he'll be 27 and he might be leaving your club anyway. But I guess my point is, in all this, if Raul de Tomas goes to Real Sociedad for $25 million, that is this one of the single greatest business, maybe the single greatest business we've seen of anyone in Europe this year, apart from like Ajax cashing in somehow $100 million on Antony or Chelsea, $60 million on Gordon. Like, that's obviously great business too. But just flipping Isak for Raul de Tomas and pocketing, like, let's say $50 million or whatever it is, that's incredible. But then that brings me to pose another question, Sam. Why wouldn't Newcastle, instead of paying $70 million for Isak, just pay $25 million for Raul de Tomas? Like, what is going on here?
I guess there's the ceiling, isn't there? I mean, Alexander Isak does have that ceiling that he could be one of the best strikers in the world. Whether he actually ever gets there or not, nobody knows. Raul de Tomas he's not going to be one of the best strikers in the world. Alexander Isak, in 5 years, he could be. I mean, we've seen that from him at times, that he has that potential. I don't think he'll get to that kind of level, but maybe Newcastle think that he will, or maybe Newcastle think that they want a statement signing this summer, which they haven't really had. I mean, we've been waiting all summer to see who they would go for, and they haven't made that signing yet. Maybe they see Alexander Isak as that big money signing that they can justify. Look, there's this guy who scored 17 goals in La Liga only a year ago. Now he's coming into our team, 70 million euros, the big investment, and he's going to be our star for the next few years. And I mean, that makes sense. If they sign Raul de Tomas, he's not going to be a star in 5 years' time for Newcastle. I mean, maybe that's the way that they could justify going for that kind of signing, but it does seem, yeah, a gamble from Newcastle at least.
The ceiling thing is an interesting point to make. Like, so to me, Isak is incredibly talented. I think de Tomas, he's like just a steady 20 goals a season kind of player, right? Yeah. He has a higher floor than Isak will. Like, he's more consistent. He'll give you kind of game-to-game production. We'll see how it goes. Apart from Raul de Tomas, who do you think La Real could look at here? I mean, as a Real Madrid fan, I think we're all hoping that we can just kind of present Mariano Diaz as a polite option for them to take on. But do you have like a short list?
Florentino Perez and Joan Laporta were there with Braithwaite and Mariano trying to offer the quickest deal they could. No, I think Raul de Tomas is a very obvious candidate. Another one that I think is a possibility is Enes Unal, who is 2 years younger, so he's 25, which might work out better for La Real with their kind of transfer strategy with the youngsters. And he was obviously very good last season. There's that question over whether it was a one-season wonder, whether that's sustainable long-term. But I think his performances in the first few weeks of this season have been pretty good as well. And there was talk that he wanted out of Getafe in the summer. Nobody came in for him. Maybe now if Real Sociedad turn up with the right amount of money, Getafe might take that. And another option, of course, is Antoine Griezmann, who was at Real Sociedad kind of the early days of his career and now is in a very difficult situation at Atletico that I'm sure we'll get on to, that maybe the answer, the solution that works best for all parties is for Antoine Griezmann to head back to San Sebastian and end up back at Anoeta.
The only thing that makes the Griezmann thing a little bit complicated is obviously there's another club involved, although I don't think they would care too much, but the salary thing. Do you think there would be some maybe shared wages going on there if he ended up back at Real Sociedad, or could they actually absorb that kind of salary? That's the question.
Well, you'd have to imagine so, wouldn't you? I mean, Atleti persuaded Griezmann to take, I think it was 50% pay cut to join from Barcelona. And then Atleti have asked him to take another 30% pay cut this season, which he hasn't yet taken. But I mean, if you're Antoine Griezmann and you've got one club asking you to take 30% less, or you can go somewhere else and maybe take 30% less, but at least you'll feel a bit happier there, then I mean, it seems like inevitably Antoine Griezmann is going to have to accept that he either goes back to Barcelona, where they're going to be desperate to get rid of him, or he's going to have to accept a lower wage somewhere. So I think all of the parties involved are so desperate to lower his wages somehow that maybe they could find a solution with Real Sociedad and find something that works out for Griezmann, because nobody wants to pay his wages. I mean, it's very Bartomeu era signing that a few years on, nobody wants to stick with it. But I think he's just going to have to find a solution, because otherwise he's going to end up kind of rotting on the Atletico bench until the end of the season. And then who knows what comes next for him after that.
The weird thing is that Griezmann back at Real Sociedad is not really a seamless tactical fit. Like, Isak makes sense. Griezmann's kind of like in the Kubo David Silva player profile. It's like running into Lionel Messi again, but not as good, obviously. But there's two of them now that play on that kind of right wing, like to cut in, go centrally, play as a 10 kind of role. So I don't know how he fits there either, to be honest. Looking back on that now, that was the worst thing that anyone ever did. Everyone lost on that Griezmann deal. He should have just stayed at Atletico instead of going to Barca, but that's done. Griezmann, you know, the salary cuts at Atletico are a thing right now. They've been asking several players to take either cuts or deferrals. Oblak and Tomas Lemar have been the other ones. Just talk to me about Atletico in general. We don't have to necessarily dive into their financial health. I think we all kind of know it's a kind of a grim state. They need to reduce some salary again this season. Tebas is making this difficult for a lot of these teams to register players. That Atletico are not necessarily in that position, but they still have to shed some salary. So Oblak and Lemar have already agreed to compromise a little bit with their contracts. Griezmann's being asked about it now. Club has not had a great start to the season. If you look at their transfer window, basically Daniel Wass, who was one of the weirdest Atletico Madrid players of all time. I don't know how many minutes did he have. Do we have numbers? You're the stats guy. How much did he play?
I think it was about 45 minutes, I think he got on his debut at Camp Nou when Diego Simeone picked him up off the floor when he couldn't walk, and then he never walked back on the pitch in an Atletico Madrid shirt again. So,
and now he's gone to Brøndby.
One of the worst signings. Yeah.
And yet completely, as he's just like disappeared now. And so Hector Herrera has gone to the MLS. Versaico is gone. And then you have some players out on loan. Then you have Nahuel Molina, who just came in, the right back, Samuel Lino. Axel Witsel was a decent bit of business for free from Dortmund. Still 33, not that old. Morata obviously returned. Saul is back. Is this squad weaker or stronger than last season?
I think it has the potential to be stronger. I mean, when you look at, there's so many players in this Atletico squad who can be great on the day. They're fantastic, like Morata, like Saul, like Marcos Llorente, players who, when they're in form, when they're confident, they're some of the best players in Spain. I mean, they'd be getting into most teams in the world. But when they're not in good form, when they're not confident, they're just a complete waste of space. I mean, we've all seen Alvaro Morata when he's not in good form, when he's lacking that bit of confidence, and he's just a nightmare to watch, really frustrating. And Saul is the same, that when he's confident, when he feels comfortable, he's capable of really pushing Atletico on to the next level. But when he's not, he's just a void of a player. And I think a lot of last season at Chelsea, we saw that he never got going, he never settled in, and Chelsea were desperate to get rid of him by the end of the season, and Atletico had been desperate to get rid of him the season before that. So it's a weird one, because the squad has players who are capable of pushing Atletico to the next level, of kind of getting into that title race, but I don't think you necessarily count on any of them to do that. I mean, if Morata has a good season, he's more than capable of making that difference, but you just don't know. I mean, it's a bit like just looking at the first two weekends of the season. We saw the 3-0 win against Getafe, where you look at Atleti and say, wow, I mean, this team can do anything this season. Morata looking fantastic. João Felix linking everything up in attack. I mean, everything looks amazing at Atleti. And then 1 week later, we go and see them play Villarreal, and just nothing clicks. I mean, tactically, they completely lost the tactical battle against Unai Emery. Just the whole thing, the system just didn't work. And wait a second, this is almost the same team. There's only one change to the starting lineup between the two games, and you could really tell that Atleti just struggled. I mean, it was weird to see a team that looked so confident and so optimistic 1 week, then look so chaotic the next week. But I mean, that's kind of Atleti, that they have that potential, but I just don't think they're consistent enough to really push Real Madrid or Barcelona this season.
I think there's like once a year where I actually enjoy Atletico play. And it usually is in a Champions League knockout game where they're forced to just play football. And then you just realize, oh my God, these guys are so talented, when like the season is on the line and there's a gun to their head and they have to do something, otherwise they're out. They go to a completely different level. Like this happened against Manchester City last season at the Wanda, where they almost, a lot of people would say, and I would probably jump in on that they probably deserved to go through in that one. They dominated City in that second leg. And then there was Liverpool the year before. other than that, you just never know what you're going to get from them. It's just, there's no consistency. Like you said, you summed it up perfectly.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's kind of a weird thing to say about Morata, but if he could just be a prolific finisher, I know that's like a big ask, and that's like such a, I'm pretending like it's just like a minor little thing you could improve, but if he was, he'd be amazing, because he does, there's everything else he does perfectly. Like, he works really hard. He's incredible off the ball to get to the ball in the first place and get to those 100 chances a game that he misses is actually a really impressive art in its own. He's talented at that. There was that one touch against Villarreal where he brought it down with his heel and he kind of turned around in one motion and fired a shot and was saved. He's talented. He's got something, but he just can't finish consistently, and that's it. And then he's basically no one's first choice striker ever. He's like, no one like will choose to go into the season with Morata as the striker, but he's like the guy as like plan B, like, okay, I guess we'll sign him if he's there because we don't really have anyone else to rely on him right now. But if everyone is healthy,
and I think
Sam,
this season as well at Atletico, there's almost a sense of that they'll have Morata as the first choice striker, but they need somebody else. But by October, they're going to end up fed up with Morata, and they need somebody to come in and replace him. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So what is inherently different about this starting 11 this year? And it doesn't have to be based on what we've seen in the first couple games, obviously, but what is inherently different about the starting 11 this year? Like, does Saul sneak in as a starter? Is Morata the de facto starter you roll in with? Where does João Felix fit? Will Marcos Llorente be playing a lot of right-back minutes again, or will that change with the new signing and he'll be playing in a more advanced role? Like, how do you see this shaping out in terms of the starting lineup?
Yeah, I think the biggest change is going to be that this season Atletico actually have a right-back. And while Molina, I mean, obviously now suspended for the next two games after his red card against Villarreal, which isn't a great start, but they do actually have a right-back who can play in that position, which for Marcos Llorente is good news. He's been in midfield in these first few weeks, but he hasn't really stood out there. So it's almost kind of, he's a piece of the puzzle that I think Diego Simeone is quite sure what to do with him now, because he's been kind of trying to work out what to do with this attack. And the system that seems to work best is almost have João Felix working off Morata. And they have linked up quite well. João Felix kind of more over towards the left and then drifting inside with Morata kind of holding the ball up. Also works quite well with a front three with Antoine Griezmann coming down the right flank as well. And Marcos Llorente kind of hasn't really fit in there at all. I think maybe he could be that Antoine Griezmann alternative on the right with kind of a front three, but it's something we're yet to see too much of. So I wonder if Simeone will kind of go in that direction, pending what happens with Antoine Griezmann between now and the end of the transfer window. But I think that could be interesting with Marcos Llorente. And the other changes, I think there aren't going to be too many. I think it's going to be more or less giving Morata that kind of number nine, almost a target man kind of position, the center forward role that Atleti didn't have quite so much last season. But I think that Diego Simeone wants to recover to try and get the best out of João Felix, that he can kind of have that player to work with, work around. And I think in pre-season especially, the link up between Morata and João Felix has been really exciting, really promising. They do seem to kind of have an understanding. Their movement between each other has been pretty good. So let's see how that evolves over the course of the season, whether Morata's confidence gets taken down a notch and maybe that doesn't work or flow quite as well. But I think that's where it's going to be interesting to see quite how Simeone evolves that attack, whether he sticks with Morata and João Felix or whether Griezmann comes in, whether Cunha or Correa come in. I mean, there's a lot of attacking talent on that Atletico bench. So, I mean, he's going to have to find a way to keep them all happy and rotate them as well. It's going to be quite a challenge for Simeone, who's not necessarily been the best at rotating and keeping players happy in the recent years. And I mean, he's definitely not Carlo Ancelotti in that sense. So it will be interesting to see how that evolves as the season goes on.
Do you think that Griezmann playing 29 minutes twice is intentional to keep it under 30 minutes, or it's pure coincidence?
It seems a very, very magical coincidence, doesn't it, that would actually happen? I mean, it's a strange one. I mean,
but how many games? Like, what's the policy exactly? Like, what's the clause? Is it?
So it's 50% of games, counting a game as where he's played more than 30 minutes.
Okay. I will say, like,
to come on two games in a row and 20 minutes left on the clock seems
very petty, if intentional. I will say, as a Real Madrid fan, that sounds glorious to us, because if it's intentional, you're not only screwing Barca over, but you're also screwing yourself over in a way, because you might actually need this guy to help you offensively. So if you're limiting his minutes because of a clause and he can't help you to his full capacity, like, I don't think he himself mentally would even come in on a good place knowing that he's restricted for that reason of the clause. So that's, it's great for the, to see the fireworks from over here from the Bernabeu.
We're talking now in August, but let's see, come the end of the season, how many games is he going to have left that he can play more than 30 minutes if there's an injury and you only have Griezmann on the bench? I mean, what do you not bring on Griezmann because you might end up having to pay 40 million euros for him? I mean, it's a really weird situation that Atleti have got themselves into.
Very weird. I mean, it's, they dug their own grave. They shouldn't have brought him back. They did Barcelona a favor and now they're paying for it. So that's on them. Let's do one more thing before we wrap it up. Wanted to talk about the fans at the stadium going at the players after the Villarreal game. Can you talk to me about that? Because I think there may be a little bit of a misconception that people might generalize that and say that was Atletico Madrid fans. This is how they're reacting. This is a very specific group of people. And Sam, as he has a cough attack drinking water. Take your time, Sam. Don't worry about it. But I think there's a bit of a misconception that Atletico fans in general are attacking the players and whatnot. And I think it's very important to clarify that this is a very, very specific group of the fan base that are ultras and they're very radical. And it's the equivalent to Real Madrid's Ultrasur who were banned out of the stadium. So Sam, if you think you can muster it, but if not, take your time, don't worry. Yeah. Can you maybe just give us a little bit of background on this fan group, who they are, what we need to know about them?
Yeah, so I mean, you said it quite well, Kian. It's a bit like the Ultrasur group at Real Madrid. They're called the Frente Atletico, a far right group who have kind of a very, very controversial history, to put it that way, which is that, I mean, they've been involved and linked to two murders of fans at, around stadiums and at games and so on in the past. And one of them was only 8 years ago, Jimmy, a Deportivo fan who was thrown over a bridge just outside the Calderon. And I mean, that was kind of a big turning point in Spanish football. A lot more action was taken against ultra groups, but the Frente Atletico is still quite close to Atletico Madrid as a club and the club's owners. So, I mean, there was action taken. They're no longer an official Peña, but they are still allowed into the stadium. I mean, it's no secret when you go to the Fondo Sur at the Metropolitano, that's kind of where the Frente Atletico group go, and that's where they're kind of always there. I mean, they've had scarves, flags, and kind of present in club events, like the COVID season when there was lockdown, a lot of the videos and photos of kind of scarves and things that have been hung up in the team dressing room were from the Atletico, that kind of thing. So, I mean, there is a very close link between the club and that group of ultras. But they are controversial even within Atletico fans because they do have very extreme right-wing politics. They are very much against the new club crest, the new stadium, the whole controversy over the team kit and everything this season. I mean, moving away from the straight red and white lines, these wavy, curvy, weird shape, whatever they have on these kits. And the Frente Atletico are kind of part of the groups that are driving that change, but also not entirely popular among Atleti fans because they are so extreme and they are very vocal. They're kind of the ones who are in the stadiums with the microphones leading the chanting and so on. But at the same time, I mean, they don't get on with everybody because they do sometimes push it too far. I mean, we've heard them, a lot of the fines that Atletico have had in recent years. I mean, singing about Courtois, Godai, Nazi salutes at Old Trafford last year. I mean, that's all from the Frente Atletico. So there are plenty of Atletico fans who are very much against the Frente Atletico. But this is kind of very them. So, I mean, they have clashed with the players quite a few times in the past. And this case against Villarreal on Sunday evening was another one where they were criticising Antoine Griezmann, insulting Antoine Griezmann after the game. And I think Antoine Griezmann has always been a strange case since he came back because there were a lot, especially within the Frente Atletico, who were very against him because they felt that he'd betrayed the club, that he'd kind of gone against the club's values to leave them for Barcelona. it's a little bit weird, and there are some conspiracy theories, to put it this way, that all of this abuse of Griezmann, which didn't really exist towards the end of the season, because by the end of the season, fans had almost forgotten about it. The fact that it's now come back, there's some conspiracy theories that maybe the people at Frente Atlético, who get on very well with Gilmarín and Cerezo, are kind of being pushed to maybe make life a little bit less comfortable for Griezmann in Madrid. But I mean, that's kind of one conspiracy theory. They're insulting Antoine Griezmann. Mario Hermoso is a very passionate guy and kind of stepped in to defend his teammate and then got insulted himself, got bottles and lighters thrown at him, that kind of thing. So, I mean, a real proper clash. And I mean, it's not something that anybody wants to see. The Frente Atlético came out with a statement saying that they don't believe in anything. They don't have anything to do with it directly, that they respect the club, they respect the badge, and that they would respect whoever reflects the values of the club. And they didn't think that Mario Hermoso reflected the values of the club, attacking his own fans. So I think it's an interesting case. Atleti say that they've opened an investigation. There's two or three fans that they've identified as being involved. But I think it's kind of more just a general feeling, not just with the Frente Atlético, but with Atlético fans as a whole, that so much has changed at Atlético over the last 10 years that, I mean, there's been a new badge, there's a new stadium, that a lot of Atlético fans disagree now, but because they disagree on the values and the history of the club. I mean, what is Atlético Madrid? For a lot of them, it was kind of the values that they had with the stadium, with the club. Now they feel like the club is moving away to be more of an international, a global thing, where the local fans don't matter so much. Others disagree, and I think there's just a whole lot of division, whereas before it was a very unified club. I think part of that is inevitable when it comes to a club that grows to the extent that Atletico have grown over the last 10 years, but also with that added edge of the politics of everything that gets thrown in with these ultra groups that make it an even more challenging situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really interesting background. Quite fun. Like, frankly, when I was listening to all of that, the entire background of the Frente, their history and all these statements, and I mean, really, like, you throw these guys got to be out of the stadium. They got to follow, Atletico have to follow the Barcelona Real Madrid route and just kick these guys out of the stadium. Obviously, it's complicated because it shouldn't be complicated, but Atletico's owners, are not the most, let's say, competent owners right now that Atletico have right now. And obviously it's a privately owned entity now. It's not public anymore. And so, you know, it may have been more clear for when Florentino Perez kicked these guys out without hesitation and they were gone. But, you know, you lost me at throwing a person off the bridge and committing murder. Like, these guys are still being let in the stadium, and it's crazy. But the Atletico situation is crazy. I mean, sometimes we just don't get enough spotlight because they're not Real Madrid or Barcelona, but there is plenty of drama there constantly. And there's just a lot happening at that club. So do you want to make any predictions for Atletico for the season, Sam, before we wrap it up?
I think they'll get top four. I think there's, whatever happens at Atletico, they always find a way to make top four. And I think they have got the quality to do that. I think they'll be top three. I think they do stand above the rest of the teams there. But I just don't think they've got enough to challenge Real Madrid or Barcelona. They don't have that consistency. Maybe if the Champions League doesn't work out for them and they go out early or something like that, then maybe that could be more of a reason to focus domestically and try and push that top two. But for me, I think that's kind of the easiest prediction in all of our league in this season is Atletico Madrid to finish third. And I think they're a pretty solid bet for that.
That sounds about right to me. They'll probably bounce back. It's crazy to look at their upcoming schedule, though. Like, they got Valencia away, and then they got Real Sociedad away, and then they got Celta at home, then they got Real Madrid at home, then they got Sevilla away. It's a really tough schedule for, like, the beginning stretch of the season. Plus, whatever Champions League games get thrown in there, because the draw is tomorrow. So we'll know the official schedule for that soon, too. Sam, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for hopping on the Churros y Tácticas podcast and making your appearance here and a debut here. Hope to have you on again soon. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Where can people find your work? Twitter?
Yeah, well, I mean, they can find me on Twitter at Sal Leverage and also Management Trading to the Cardona, as you mentioned earlier on, Kian. And yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, after every Atletico and Real Madrid game on either Into the Calderon or Managing Madrid, Sam will have three stats. And there's at least always two of those stats, usually three, but at least two of them. I'm like, oh, wow, I had no idea. That was crazy. There was one Luka Modric one that blew my mind recently. I don't even remember what it was now.
Was it 56% of his goals have come from outside the box for Real Madrid?
That's crazy. Yeah, but over half of his Real Madrid goals have come outside the box. That one blew my mind when I read that one. That just, I mean, it makes sense when you think back to all of his goals, but when you just read it in writing, it was pretty mind-blowing. So, yeah. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate your time. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Keegan.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.